Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
We have some good conference championship games, and we have some bad ones on tap coming up this weekend. And the best one is in the Big 12. Kansas State, TCU, the Dr. Pepper Big 12 Championship. TCU's favored by 2.5. If you want to look on paper, you could say that Utah-USC game from an odds maker standpoint is also a 2.5-point spread. So that's a really good game, too, tonight.
Oh, it's a giant game tonight.
Yeah.
And you may not even think about it being on Friday night.
Yeah.
But I think Utah might be the best team in the Pac-12, but they lost that game to Florida early, mm-hmm. and it just hangs on them so strongly that they were – I didn't think they'd get to this game. They're going to be so dangerous for USC. And if USC loses, they're not going to go to the college football playoff. And the Pac-12 doesn't get to go very often. So if you're a Pac-12 person right now, if you're an official, you're hoping the officials know – no, not just joking. They need USC to win. The Pac-12 needs the money, the prestige for USC. So a giant game tonight and really a close game.
I'm just going to throw my little two cents in that I think that conference champions should go to the playoff, period. I don't care how many losses you have. It's just
2014 was the first college football playoff, and every – like Purdue should be playing for a chance to get into the college football playoff.
K-State should be playing for that. K-State should absolutely be playing for that.
Right.
You know,
win this game.
Yeah.
And no doubt about it.
Determine your champion however you want, you know. But your champ should go.
Exactly. And then how big would the North Carolina-Clemson game be?
Right.
Because they're both struggling, and they're both pretty good. It's an even game, but it's off the radar screen. People don't really care about it. The only one that features two top 10 teams playing against each other is the Big 12 Championship, K-State and TCU. And it's the fourth straight year the Big 12 has had two top 10 teams playing each other in the championship game.
So let's talk about it. I mean,
yes,
you saw the first go-round. Quarterbacks getting banged up. That seems to be a trend with TCU. They
knock every quarterback out.
They do.
And they did last week against Iowa State.
Yeah.
Decker's got knocked out of the game.
Yeah. There's a trend there.
And TCU doesn't have any injuries. Going over their players, I look down, and there's 12 games played by TCU. They're undefeated. They've won close games. Congratulations. Great job in a hard, hard, hard Big 12. And then I keep going, 12 starts. I think they ended the year with four players not getting a start. Like four games, they didn't have the starters they want out there. It's kind of an undercurrent story. In football, you get beat up. You've got to look at your backups. You've got to be ready. You have to have depth to play at the championship level.
Right.
Okay? TCU has broken those odds. One of the reasons why they're undefeated is their starters have made it all the way through the seasons. The guys they want to play have been there all year long. The continuity between receivers, quarterback, linemen working together, defense, they have a varied defense. They bring blitzes all over the place. It's one of the stories. They're the team in the country that has avoided the injuries, and it's hard to do in football. So remember that about TCU. They've had all the good luck on the injury side. And on the other side, they've knocked out a quarterback almost every game they play. They knocked the quarterback out of the game.
I was there when Jalen Daniels got smashed, you know, and it's just happens.
Oklahoma's season got blown up when the quarterback got killed.
Yeah.
Because K-State beat Oklahoma, and then TCU knocked the quarterback out, beat him again, and they're on a downward spiral. Oklahoma ended up 6-6, tied with Kansas in the overall record.
Whoa.
And 3-5. You started playing some music on that.
My computer got excited.
You're like Marco right there.
What I have on the web on my computer here is the box score from the K-State TCU game from earlier this year. I decided to play an ad and I didn't realize. But
so
K-State gets out to a big lead in that game. Let's go back, kind of relive that a little bit. When they were up, what was it, 28-10, I believe
yes.
it was.
Mm-hmm.
What was going so well for K-State? And do you expect to see some of those types of things in this game against TCU on the rematch?
Well, TCU is undefeated and a chance to play in the college football playoff. And if you look at it from their perspective, you know, how dangerous is it to play a K-State team? It's very dangerous. I'm not sitting here in Kansas City you know, doing K-State games, acting like, oh, man, K-State's so great, they're going to wipe TCU off. I'm not talking about in those terms. But I've said it publicly. I think the game, you can choose your spot how you want to, but you're going to pick between 40 and 50% chance of K-State winning. That's how well they match up with TCU. Yeah. Both teams have a lot of things in common. Number one is they're good kind of across the board in everything, just even special teams.
Yeah.
Do you realize that TCU's punt team has had only three punt returns returned all year for a total of 15 yards? And the long one was a 15-yarder. So they basically had one punt return for 15 yards, and otherwise they don't let you punt return. Darius Davis, their punt returner, has two punt returns for touchdowns and a TCU record 5 in his career. Their field goal kicker, first team all Big 12, went out and hit that big kick. Steven, you remember that big kick against Baylor where they ran out with the clock running? He only missed one field goal all year. So here you go. TCU, great at special teams. Matches up well with K-State, great at special teams. Defensively, TCU is good, but they're not dominant. They don't just shut you down. They attack, they hit, but there are plays to be had out there. Offensively, they're very good. They can run, they can pass. Both these teams mirror each other in a lot of ways. You got to really look deep to find differences. The thing that TCU has is an explosive wide receiver core with speed that has big plays. They had four touchdowns of 60 yards or more against Oklahoma. Max Duggan is playing great, throwing the football. But K-State, on the other side, has some injuries in the secondary, in the safety position, so maybe that may be a differential. But otherwise, K-State, when they matched up, Will Howard walked out on the field after the third play of the game. Adrian Martinez played the first three plays. And by the way, K-State thought they could run the ball against TCU with quarterback run. So they loved having Adrian Martinez as a quarterback. But on the third play of the game, he gets hurt, walks off. We didn't know he's hurt, and all of a sudden, Will Howard gets his first introduction to K-State football this season and lines K-State up with four straight touchdowns at TCU on the grass. And so the other thing for K-State, Deuce Vaughn, when a guy walks out on the field, you just think they're all 100% all the time. I mean, every time I see Travis Kelce, I think, oh, there's Travis. But, you know, sometimes he's a little more beat up than other games. Maybe with his podcast, which is really great listening to, right? You might hear that he's up and down. Well, Deuce Vaughn actually got beat up a little bit and was not 100% against TCU. He's more healthy now than he was then. And he's the variable for K-State. He can attack as a pass receiver. He can run. He can lead blocks for Malik Knowles, who's hitting his stride, right? Malik Knowles scored a touchdown.
Yep.
Two TDs against Kansas and had a long run on jet sweeps. He also had a good kickoff return of 60-plus yards. You know, Deuce Vaughn's the guy who leads those sweeps when they hand the ball off on a jet sweep. So K-State against TCU, what was going well is that Will Howard was making great decisions. The K-State offense was functioning at a high level, which they have an opportunity to do, and they led 28-10. TCU did a couple of things really well, and they're worth noting, and it's also a factor of modern football. In modern football, sequencing matters. They were down 28-10 against K-State and got the ball backed up at their own 10-yard line with not much time left in the first half. They went and scored a touchdown, used the rest of the half, came back, started the third quarter with a touchdown drive, and the K-State offense had done nothing wrong, and look up, and now they lead by 4 instead of 18. And obviously what happens with the momentum. The other thing that's very notable there is the offensive coordinator for TCU is Garrett Riley. Lincoln Riley, the best offensive guy in the country right now, who is at Oklahoma and is the USC head coach. His little brother, Garrett Riley, is the offensive coordinator for Sonny Dykes here at TCU. And the discipline that he showed in that game was elite because they're getting whipped 28-10 right before the half, backed up. Max Duggan, who's playing great football, wide receivers that are awesome. You know what he did? Ran the ball. He ran the ball and he hit a 45-yard run, changed the momentum, and was all said and done. Kendre Miller, first-team All-Big 12 running back, physical presence, ended up being the difference. K-State did not stop the TCU run. That was the story of that game and one other factor, turnover margin, 2-0. K-State's one of the best in the country at near plus 15 in turnover margin, but TCU has not lost a turnover battle yet this year. Never have lost the turnover battle, and they won it 2-0 against K-State. But it was also K-State's third-string quarterback who came in and threw an interception. How does K-State win this game? How about just winning the turnover battle by one? That would be all new for TCU, right? You do that. and what happens if K-State tackles Kendre Miller better. It was the worst tackling game that K-State had. Daniel Green, one of their best players at middle linebacker, was out with injury and didn't play the whole game. And then Khalid Duke, a really star type of player, got a targeting call and missed a half. So I'm not building up like K-State's going to whip TCU. Don't get me wrong. You got to play at a high level. But K-State has the capability. Can they learn from and slow down the TCU running game from the mistakes they made? If they do, and they don't lose the turnover battle 2-0, why wouldn't you think this game's going down to the last minutes of the game? And who will feel pressure in the last minutes of the
right.
game? We've known it from the Big 12. The first game in 1996, Nebraska was dominant, Texas was good, and who won the Big 12 championship game? Texas. Yeah. 1998, K-State's going to play for a national championship until double overtime winner A&M beats them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of stuff's happened in the Big 12.
Yep.
And tonight we might see Utah blow USC up for the Pac-12, and we might see K-State beat TCU. So the pressure is going to be on TCU if K-State keeps it close. There's a big-time scenario. I look at it as a complete toss-up game. I think K-State and TCU are really close to being the same, but I don't want to be disrespectful to TCU. When you win close games, when you're as good as they are in a lot of places, and you're 12-0, I don't want to disrespect 12-0. K-State lost 3 times, so they deserve a ton of credit. But when I watched the tape going into that game, I thought K-State matched up well with them, and I don't think it's any different right now.
Once again, Stan Weber's segment today is brought to you by the Historic West Bottoms Entertainment District. It's First Fridays at the Historic West Bottoms, and it's the kickoff to the holiday season. The lights will be turned on tonight at 5:30, so come down and discover the unique Historic West Bottoms and find the perfect gift at the more than 30 stores. The Grinch, Cindy Lou Who, Santa, Mrs. Claus, the elves are all going to be there in the Historic West Bottoms for the tree lighting tonight to kick off the holiday season. So if you can't make it tonight, fun's going to be had all Saturday and Sunday and throughout the month of December. Put a bow on it with a trip to the Kansas City's West Bottoms. And I know a lot of people are very excited about this Big 12 championship game, including our good friend Amber Arnett Beckwith, who, like I said, has 2 sons on the team. And she just texted and said that she will be down there tonight for the festivities and then a 5 a.m. flight to go to the Big 12 championship game. So there will be a purple wave of people headed down there for the Big 12 title game. But, Stan, you kind of hit on the point that I was going to ask you about. And, look, this is only a 2.5-point spread, according to Vegas. And I know I live in the bubble of Kansas City where most people are leaning towards K-State, but I haven't heard anyone pick TCU in this game. And so can they at all, and you've gone out of your way to say you respect them, they are 12-0, and they've won all these close games. But, man, I haven't heard anyone picking them to win. I think most people feel like K-State's going to win. It's tough to beat the same team, a good team, twice in the year. Is there any way that TCU can play a disrespect card and say, hey, look, we're 12-0, no one respects us, and everyone's picking a close game, or everyone's picking K-State?
They definitely can. It's been, you know, College Game Day, the ESPN version, was in Lawrence. It was a big deal this year, first time ever. They're at this game. Now, it's not like being a home game, but they picked this game, and Lee Corso's the guy who, for many, many years, made famous, hey, let's pick the games, right? And they have a pick segment at the end. He has been saying for 3 weeks, TCU is going to lose. And he said last week, when he had K-State KU, they picked that game, and Lee Corso said that K-State's going to win this week and next week. So it's such a national thing to jump on the K-State bandwagon to put the upset special in place. So there's a lot of momentum for this game, and it's going to be a great championship game. But, yeah, they definitely can play that card, because why don't you believe in them? You know, Max Duggan, I think I'm going to vote for the Heisman Monday, and he is in consideration. There are not a lot of obvious candidates. Caleb Williams, USC quarterback, obviously, has a big chance tonight to put a great stamp on a season at USC. But Max Duggan is right in the conversation to deserve possibly a first-place vote in the Heisman Trophy voting. So they definitely can play the disrespect card, Stephen, and I think they will try to do that. And they'll play it in a lot of ways. You know, that stadium, my wife is pretty interesting because she keeps track of sports just enough to ask really good questions because she doesn't study it to the nth degree and doesn't care. So she goes, isn't that kind of unfair that TCU's playing in a game 20 miles away from their campus? I mean, K-State's kind of got a road game again. I go, No, you don't understand. TCU doesn't have that many students. They're a private school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to have a number of people work their way over and be excited about this chance to win their first Big 12 championship in the Big 12. They're going to be there. But K-State fans are so many more.
Yep.
They travel so well.
Yep.
They respect this opportunity. They haven't been in a championship game since 2003. They won a championship in 2012. A chance to win a third championship ties them for the second most behind Oklahoma. Oklahoma's won 14 out of the 27 years. K-State is sitting at 2. Baylor has 3. Texas has 3. From a long time ago, they tie for second place in the most Big 12 championships ever, and they're the only team other than Oklahoma to win in all three phases. That first 16 years where it was divisions, 12 teams, championship game, South versus North, K-State won one in that setting, 2003. Then they went 6 years, full round robin, no championship game, K-State won in 2012 in that setting. If they can win in this new setting, full round robin, first and second place play each other, I mean, there's so much at stake that TCU can say, look at this. We're here in our home, right 20 miles away, and these K-State fans think they own this place, that they're going to have more fans than we are. You know, they're going to make, because there probably will be.
Oh, yeah.
I think there'll be more K-State fans.
For sure.
It's going to be hard to tell, because
when you're walking, gonna be in purple.
When you're walking around purple everywhere, you got to walk real close to someone. And oh, that's a TCU logo.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a Power Cat.
Yeah.
You know, seriously, when we're playing TCU, it's you walk by and you got to look real close to see, are you talking to somebody? So I do think they can play that card, Stephen. That people don't believe in them. College football playoff doesn't want them. And they are the poster child for what we think has been kind of wrong about the college football playoff. Four teams. You mentioned conference champions should get in. We know that. But even in the four teams, in 2014, in the first year, Baylor and TCU tied for first place. TCU was ranked in the top four at this point in that season and went out and whipped Iowa State in their last regular season game. And then got moved out, and Ohio State got moved in 2014. You don't think they're playing the disrespect card that no one wants them in the championship game? Everyone wants K-State to win? So I think it is. But, Amber?
That's why this game's happening.
Exactly.
I mean, that's why they got to beat K-State a second time. And if now you're
so
like, why do we have to beat these guys again?
Again?
It
goes away next year, 14 teams. So now it'll probably be good we have a championship game.
Yeah.
But this is like unfair to TCU.
Yep.
You beat K-State.
Yep.
You came back from 18. You did your work. And now you got to prove it again. And after the game's over, you go like, we're 1-1. Can we play a third time? No. You lost the wrong game.
Yeah.
You're not going to the, you know. Yeah. So there's a lot at stake. Amber, listen closely. You're excited. And your sons may be a part of something that is absolutely historic. Nate, you ready for this? If K-State wins this championship, I talked about how it is on a cumulative basis in 27 years, how great it is, but it will be in K-State football history. If the Wildcats beat TCU tomorrow, it'll be the first time in K-State football history that the Wildcats, as a top 10 team, facing another top 10 team, gets over the hump and wins the game. First time ever, elite against elite, and K-State comes out on top. It will not be easy. All the great football K-State's played, they've never been in a top 10 versus top 10 matchup and got the job done. And oh, by the way, they're the underdog, number 10 against number 4 or number 3. Not easy to do, but they beat TCU. It'll be the second highest ranked team they've ever won. The highest? Big 12 championship game, 2003, number 1 Oklahoma. This will be the second highest team they've ever beaten. They've beaten a number 3 team a couple of times, but never as a top 10 versus top 10. When everyone in the country is looking and going, elite ball game. What's the best ball game tomorrow? Nate, in football, not your sport, in football, what's the best game tomorrow? K-State,
yep.
TCU, right?
Hands down.
So,
hands
big
down.
Time win. Yeah. And the K-State fans are, I mean, they are heading south.
Oh, I mean, and that's the same thing we were
students,
talking.
Students, everybody.
Yeah,
I mean, it's unbelievable.
We were talking with Lebo, like, if the bowl team, the bowls, all they want K-State. They don't want TCU. You know, TCU, because it just is true. And I've been down there, you know, back when I did the sidelines. You go to they got money. They got a beautiful stadium, and it kind of fills up. It's not a big stadium because it's a small school. It's a private school. It's not a big state school. And one thing you know about K-State fans, they're showing up, man. They are showing up. And they're going to show. I mean, this is big, like you said, you get a chance to play for a Big 12 title. You know, they're going to turn out. And by the way, No, nobody else in the Big 12 wants to hear anybody griping about playing a home game in a title game, because when KU gets to play in the, you know, in the Sprint Center or T-Mobile Arena, you know, every year, so it just, that's part of the deal. All right, let's transition, Stan, because then we have this game on Saturday. Incredible game. It's going to be awesome. And then Sunday, there's all these great games in the NFL, but I don't know if it's the best game. It's that or the Dolphins 49ers game.
No, this is the best game.
Okay, all right. There you go. Chiefs Bengals rematch the AFC Championship game. What are your thoughts on? I mean, I think most of us around here feel like, okay, this is the revenge opportunity for the Chiefs. But how do you see this game?
I think it's important for the psychology of the Chiefs to go ahead and get this win. It's just a regular season game. Because when we look back at the Buffalo game, I think we can say that. Yes, Buffalo came into Arrowhead and won the game, but that is not the playoff game. The Chiefs won the playoff game, right? So you can say, yeah, you won two regular season games last year and this year. We respect you, Buffalo. It's going to be a war if we play again, but the playoffs are for the big boys. That's us. But uh-oh, Cincinnati won the regular season game. We really didn't see it coming, right? You didn't feature this game last year at Cincinnati. I don't think we talked about it. But you do talk about, oh, boy, this is elite football. And then the Chiefs got ahead. And you kind of went to sleep and said, oh, Chiefs are going to do their work. And then all of a sudden, Chase went crazy. Bengals win. And you say, oh, it's only regular season. Well, that second half, even if it's an aberration that Patrick Mahomes has never played like he did in the second half of the championship game, Cincinnati won the game. And if they do that again, there should be a level of confidence. These pro athletes can store this in the back of their mind. Matchups matter. Steven, you talk about, as an expert in boxing, matchups matter. I don't understand all that, but you know who you're playing matters. So there is a lot at stake to just say, let's balance this thing back out. Let them know that Cincinnati, you're trying to get to the level. Yeah, you made it to the Super Bowl, but you're trying to stick at the level the Chiefs are playing, and it's going to be very hard. So I think it's a very important game for the Chiefs. It's not in the standings or in the tiebreakers or anything else. They're going to win the AFC West. They beat the Chargers head-to-head. They're going to have the best record in the AFC, almost for sure. Buffalo plays a murderer's row of a schedule against a hard AFC East. Miami plays a murderer's row, starting with San Francisco, where they're not going to make it through clean. And the Chiefs have an easy run after this. So I think the Chiefs are going to have the number one seed. It's not about that, but getting ready for the psychological battle, the war that is to win the Super Bowl, to get to the Super Bowl, I believe is all about the Chiefs facing Buffalo and Cincinnati. Now, I have respect for Tennessee because they kind of match up well and like fighting the Chiefs, right? That physical style. But I am such a believer in Cincinnati. When they were 0-2, mm-hmm. I believed in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. They are dangerous. Joe Burrow is the real deal. Lamar Jackson has his times. You can give me this quarterback, that quarterback. I believe in Joe Burrow. 10 years from now, he can win two Super Bowls. That's how good he is. He doesn't move well in a pocket. But once he releases the ball, he is accurate, he throws down the field, and he is a cold-blooded killer. The Bengals are the real deal. But they lose tomorrow, then they're worried about making their playoff position, even winning the division. It's not easy being great, right? Cincinnati is struggling with everyone expects us to be good, everyone's attacking us, and they're not playing flawlessly. But I think when we get to the end, guys, when we get to the playoffs, there are going to be three teams in the AFC fighting for that chance of playing the Super Bowl. Chiefs most likely, Buffalo next, and Cincinnati. So I do think that's the level of team they're playing, and this is a great game for regular season for fans to watch. Last week was supposed to be, guys, the second-best NFL game when we went into the season on the schedule.
Yep.
Was Super Bowl defending champion Rams mm-hmm. heading to Kansas City. And the number one game was the Buffalo Chiefs game. The NFL was looking forward to having those games, and the Rams turned into a total dud. I think the Rams are a dud, and the Bengals are for real. I don't know if you guys respect them as much as I do, but I think the Bengals are a dangerous Super Bowl-level team when they play their best.
I'm with you. I'm to the point now where I'm up in the air as far as who I think the second-best quarterback is now between Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. I don't know.
What do you think, Stan?
I think in the playoffs, too, I think I might – oh, boy. I'll let you know more on Sunday, but I think I might fear Cincinnati more than Buffalo in the playoffs.
Buffalo is further along in learn. The thing I want to point out here, if it's making sense to you, is it's one thing to develop your program to be good enough to be thought of as one of the best, but to stay there when everyone expects it, expects it to be easy. Your fans think it's easy. They overreact to every loss or every game. You only win by seven. You know, it is so much stress on these guys. You got to learn how to win. Buffalo's further along in that, so they're fully developed, but I don't think Buffalo's defense is as reliable as Cincinnati's in a big game setting. I don't know if you see that, Steven. I think their coordinator for the Bengals does a better job of rising up in a big game. Not all 17 games. Buffalo's defense is good for 17 games. But I think Cincinnati specializes in playing certain opponents well. And then on the offensive side, you know, Joe Burrow, when he was at LSU, that I think that was the greatest college football team ever.
I mean, that receiving core would be...
They had NFL stars everywhere.
Yeah.
And Joe was just a killer. And to overcome Ed Ogeron's coaching...
Right.
You're talking about one of the worst coaches in all of college football. Yeah. Is undefeated and killing everybody. So, I mean, Joe Burrow is a cold-blooded killer. And his dad was a coach. Don't forget, when we talk about Patrick Mahomes hanging around in Major League locker rooms. I think that's big. Mm-hmm. You guys mentioned earlier today, if I heard you right, talking about when you're a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, the effect that being a child and some of the experiences you have that still are full-color part of you being a grown man. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday, Stephen, belatedly. Right. You are really a man now, man. 50 years old, is that right?
Oh, boy, that's right.
But you still are a kid at heart, right?
So you better believe it.
So I think it's a giant factor that Patrick Mahomes is around the elite. Yeah. And acting like it's no big deal.
No doubt.
Well, Joe Burrow was with Frank Solich. His dad was with Frank Solich, who deserves a ton of credit for what he did at Nebraska mm-hmm. and Ohio. An mm-hmm. underrated coach that was awesome. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow's dad was his number one assistant. That's what he grew up around. Just steady, fighting, believe in yourself football. And he plays it. He doesn't budge on the field. Doesn't matter what he does. He has a confidence level like Patrick Mahomes, maybe a cockiness that is deserved, but you can't break him. And I don't know about Josh Allen. He's such a likable guy. Did you hear him last night in postgame?
I didn't.
He's such a good guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he is such a likable guy. But they said, do they ever talk to you about not taking so many hits? He's like, yeah, all the time. But I'm a football player. And he can't stop himself, so I think he's going to get beat up.
Yeah.
Joe can't move. His knees hurt. He had an ACL, you know, with the Bengals in the year one. Joe's fragile, like a Joe Namath fragile. He may break down where Josh is just physically able to run and move and all of that. But I tell you what, accuracy in the pocket, I think, is the number one indicator of what the greatest quarterbacks have done to win over time. Accuracy mm-hmm. in the pocket. Mm-hmm. And guess who's super accurate in the pocket right now? Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. You can look at all those left-handed throws and movement. You know what he's doing? He's killing it throwing from the pocket. And that's where Joe Burrow beats out Josh Allen. So I'll listen to you guys if you want to tell me you're more worried about Cincinnati. But Cincinnati needs to prove some things. What happened if the Chiefs go out and beat them by 14? And then they lose a game to the Ravens. And suddenly they're limping into the playoffs. They've mm-hmm. not proven they're ready for prime time year after year. And Buffalo has. So I'd love to hear anybody. If we have 100 people who want to vote, I think 50 on the side of Buffalo or a little more, and 50 on for Cincinnati, I'm listening all day long because they're kind of different. But accuracy in a pocket, who's better in the NFL than Joe Burrow? Accuracy in a pocket. Patrick Mahomes. Who else is there?
Right now, that might be it. In the past, I would have said Aaron Rodgers, but he's not that guy
anymore. Yeah, Aaron, Tom Brady. Aaron and Tom, but I think Joe's the most accurate quarterback. Here's I don't know if you guys, on your HD TV, you can see the secondary, some linebacker area, but my eyes cannot separate well enough. I need to teach my eyes mm-hmm. to watch the quarterback in the line and then also see the secondary. You can see it if you look, but I can't see it all. Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When Joe Burrow throws the football, if he's standing with both feet in the pocket and throw, I just assume it's complete. I'm telling you, it's a 95% chance. He completes like 70% of his passes. But if he throws from the pocket without moving on time, I don't care if it's a 25-yard throw or an 8-yard throw, he sticks it on the guys. It's like if he doesn't get sacked or moved, complete.
I think that it comes down to what Steven said. Check back with me on Monday. You know, we'll see how we feel, and that's what makes this game so fun. I want to play a couple of the clips from Patrick Mahomes for Stan Weber and get his reaction, because I think just some phenomenal insight to what we're talking about that makes these guys such special quarterbacks.
Also, Nate, I sent Marco some trash talk from the Bengals locker room yesterday.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, there was
some anger. How did you sneak in there, Steven? Did you sneak in there?
And by the way, let me tell you this. You know what matchup I'd like to see in the playoffs? I'd like to see the Bengals and the Bills play so I could watch this fantastic quarterback duel in the playoffs and not be so stressed out.
Yeah. And knock one of them out. You're exactly right. That's what you need.
Let them play each other.
And they both take big hits, by the way, because Burrow, not because he runs, but he stands in there. He's not afraid to get hit. So he takes big hits in the pocket a lot of times. We'll hear all that when we come back with Stan Weber on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We've got Stan Weber in studio, and so many great storylines. I want to play a
clip. Do we get to go till 2 o'clock this afternoon?
That would be great.
Steven, are you okay? Can you make it that long?
I'll just lay down.
There you go. Do it.
The headset stays on when you lay down, right?
You can take it into the bathroom if you need to.
Just got
to
lay on your back.
Hey, let's play the trash talk, because that's been a storyline that's a couple days in the works between the Chiefs and Bengals. Before we get to this clip, I want to play for Stan from the Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce podcast. Steven, do you want to set this up, the latest from the Cincinnati Bengals here?
Marco, do you have it? One of them might. Did you listen to all of them, by the way? Are they? Can we play them? Can we play the Hayden Hurst? That's the only one I have a question about.
Sure, but I got 7 seconds to dump just in case.
Okay. Okay,
so
first,
do you want to listen
to live?
It? Yeah, do you want to listen to it first before we do this, Marco? What do you want to do?
Nah, let's roll. It's okay. Friday.
I kind of like flying blind. That's exciting for me.
Let's live dangerously.
First, let's play Jamar Chase. This was yesterday in the locker room. And you want to give some background to this? Because this happened when I was going with Justin Reed.
Okay, so Justin Reed was asked about the Bengals' passing attack and
the Chiefs' new safety.
Yeah, and he
wasn't
here
last year.
And he was talking about the guy that he was thinking about, number 88 for the Bengals, and he couldn't remember his name, and he said Higbee, and he's like, "Oh wait, no, that's the guy we played last weekend." And look, players,
they do it by numbers.
They know numbers. They're studying numbers and film every week. And so the person interviewing him thought he must be talking about Higgins because he said Higbee. So he said T. Higgins, and he goes, "Oh yeah." But he said 88. That's Hayden Hurst. That's the tight end he was talking about. And then he said, "I'm going to lock him down. You can bet on that," or something like that. Well, Jamar Chase then went to Twitter and said, something like, "We'll see." He tweeted at him.
A can and cat emoji.
And then Justin retweeted back at him and said, "You're welcome for the extra motivation. I'll see you on Sunday, champ." And then he said, "Tuna in a can" with a kitty cat emoji, which I guess means he's a cat. He's going to feast on Justin Reed as a tuna, as some tuna fish. So that's kind of the Twitter back and forth that took place. And it's all kind of a comedy of errors, because three different people got thrown out there when Justin Reed was trying to talk. We're pretty sure he was actually trying to talk about Hayden Hurst, not the wide receivers. So here we go. You want to start with Jamar Chase first and what he has to say.
Here's Jamar Chase, who he says he doesn't think Justin Reed watches film at all after he was talking about the Bengals in the locker room.
I ain't really have no comment about it until he made another comment and said everybody else was going to get locked down. So that's when I buzzed in to decide to say something on Twitter.
Do you think maybe he just hadn't watched enough film on the receivers in Cincinnati?
I don't think he's watching film at all. I don't think he knows his personnel on whoever he's trying to check, or if he isn't even checking anybody. So it's just, he need to go back and watch, the film, look at his personnel, look at what he wants to know. So, I mean.
Okay, so here's Cincinnati safety Von Bell, who said he was sitting in the cold tub with Hayden Hurst when Justin Reed's comments started hitting the bulletin board on Wednesday. And here's what Von Bell had to say.
Reed with Kansas City made a few interesting headline comments, and I know that a few guys have commented on that. What was your reaction to seeing all of that stuff blow up yesterday?
I was confused. I was confused. Because what was crazy, I was sitting next to Hayden in the cold tub, in the hot tub cold tub, and he was talking about it. I didn't know what he was talking about. Now it came up to life. I'm like, oh, that's what he was talking about. But I look confused, but we're just going to let the past do the talking on Sunday.
Let the pads do the talking on Sunday. And here we'll be flying blind here. Here's Hayden Hurst as he gives his reaction to Justin Reed's comments about him, even though Justin Reed wasn't sure of his name.
One thing I do want to say, he also, I should point this, because I don't know if Hayden Hurst is going to address this, but one thing Justin Reed did say was he's kind of a finesse player, not much of a blocker. And, you know, those are fighting words for most tight ends, so I don't know if Hurst got into that at all, but that's one of the things.
Well, here's Hayden Hurst and his reaction.
Going to attempt to cover me that said something about me or to me or, I guess, whoever he thought he was talking about. Don't really care.
Did you laugh or were you like,
I laughed a little bit. I don't know. I mean, you can pick anybody in this locker room, but you know, I feel like I'm the last person you probably want to talk shit about. Because I have a long memory.
So you're keeping the receipts?
It's going to be fun.
I don't know if we had to dump part of that, but he basically said, I'm the last guy in the locker room you want to talk blank about. I have a pretty long memory, and this is going to be fun.
Well, this is what I was speaking about before. All of this chatter can get into a human's brain. They are not machines.
Mm-hmm.
So does it fire Jamar Chase up, who's been injured, to make it back and play great? Is it a distraction that keeps you away from your function of playing football, which is really hard and about fundamentals and concentration and taking care of your own business? And the reason why I mention that is because who knows how the Bengals react to that? That is part of being really good and then everyone expecting you to win and play at a high level in big games and all the time. How do you handle all that? And the Chiefs are so awesome at it. You know, Travis Kelce, how much fun is he having? Patrick Mahomes will make comments. But how often do they get caught intertwined with other teams and issues? No, they're very focused on, we listen to Coach Andy Reid, Big Red, we do our thing, and we're going to put a level out there that's going to be hard to match. You see what I'm saying? That's where I don't know where the Bengals are in their development. When the reporters are in there trying to create headline activity and make it a lot of fun, you could tell by the reporters, they're trying to get them fired up. You know, how do you handle that? The Chiefs are perfect at handling it, aren't they? I mean, they know how to just win and be back talking about another rivalry and all this kind of stuff. How are the Bengals going to handle that? How is Buffalo going to handle it? The Bills are better at it than the Bengals right now. But these are the kind of questions. You know, are the Bengals going to come out and be so fired up that they lose their fundamentals and do stupid stuff and the Chiefs beat them? Or are they – I don't know how they're going to respond to this. And it's part of the week after week after week grind in NFL. And to me, if my players are getting into this and – stuff, you kind of wonder, and what do the Chiefs do about Reed? Does Patrick Mahomes go tap him on the shoulder and go, hey, dude, I know you're new to the Chiefs, but don't get caught up in this stuff.
Or
go ahead and bait him. I don't know what they're saying.
My guess is Andy Reid's probably had a word with him, and it probably was just a word. You know, and listening to this, we're going to get to this Kelce, Mahomes back and forth. Listening to that podcast yesterday, listen to the way they talk about Andy Reid. Patrick Mahomes said when he got into the part about the State Farm commercial, State Farm went to him and asked him, hey, would you ask Andy Reid if he'll do a commercial with you? They had this whole idea with the mustache thing. And he's like, absolutely not. I am not asking Andy Reid to do a commercial with me. You guys can ask him if you want to. That's Patrick Mahomes, the best player in the NFL. He's intimidated by Andy Reid in that respect and respects him that much.
And Travis Kelce also had that. Remember an earlier podcast that Stephen played this year when he said, hey, his brother said, hey, why don't you get Patrick Mahomes on? He's like, I think I can. And he wanted to make a funny comedy. He goes, don't make that comment or I won't get Pat on.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, what about Andy? And he goes, no, I don't think I'll be asking, Coach.
That's a big ask.
That's
a big ask.
And it was funny in this podcast, he kind of said, you could tell he was nervous to ask Mahomes, his best friend, you know, to come on his podcast. But I want to get into this because I think, like, when you talk about the professionalism that you see from both Kelce and Mahomes, Kelce wasn't always that way early in his career. And that didn't just happen by accident. Here is Mahomes talking about the biggest lessons he learned from Alex Smith on how to be a pro. So this will be cut five. Yeah, here we go. So this is the biggest lesson that Mahomes learned from Alex Smith.
I think the biggest thing Alex did for me was teach me what I need to watch film-wise during the week. what days to watch it to prepare yourself for the next day. And for me, I come in Monday, Tuesday, and I'm just watching games. I obviously watch the game we played the day before, but I'm watching like 5 to 6 games of the other team just to get a general sense of the feeling of what they're doing. And then after we put the base install plan in, I watched the third down cut up before I leave the building that day because Alex did that, and it taught me to get – let's get a day ahead on the third downs before I step in here and we get the plan in here. Let me have a day ahead on that, and then the same thing the next day with the red zone. And then the short yardage and goal line. It's the same. Every day I kind of would just add a little by little. So it didn't overwhelm me, and I wasn't watching so much film at once. But I have a good feeling for each situation in the game, and it helped me so much because instead of just playing out there, when I get in situations in the game, I have a good feeling for the defense likes to get to these coverages. They like to play this leverage on the DB with the DBs, and it helps me execute at a high level. So having Alex, man, I'll forever say it, man. It probably made my game jump 3 steps. When I could have took 3 years to get those 3 steps.
100%, man. There was probably a lot of trial and error through that guy's career that got him to the point where he got that perfect routine Monday through Friday.
Dude, the guy had, you know what I mean? The guy had 7 offensive coordinators in 6 years in San Francisco, man. I mean, he literally had to learn by like through trial by fire, and he taught me how to not make those same mistakes. And from little things like in under center, I'm coming from the shotgun every single play. He's like, hey, have your feet like this. It'll help you get out from under center faster. I mean, like just little things like that you would never think of when you step into the league.
A guy like Anthony Fasano, my first couple years, coming in and just observing how he's a professional Monday through Friday, and to find those routine things to keep your body fresh every Sunday. You got to do certain stuff in the weight room, on the field, and recovery and all this stuff. And Anthony did he didn't have to do that. Like you said, there's a lot of guys out here that are saying, I'm not a mentor, man. I'm not out here, you know, bullshit. All right. If you're a team guy, you're going to help the guy next to you, no matter if the world thinks he's better than you or not. You know what I mean? Like, I love feeding the tight ends that come into this building with as much information as I could possibly give them on how to get open in routes, how to be more comfortable in this offense. If you're not helping out the guy next to you, what are we doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Man?
How great does the future look?
Right?
I mean, Alex Smith deserves a ton of credit. Winning divisions here and functioning in Andy Reid's system, and that year that he started when Mahomes was a rookie was one of the greatest passing years in Chiefs history.
Mm-hmm.
Big plays and all of that. But look where we are right now with these two superstars respecting their coach and each other, like we talked about before the clip, and then listening to them, how they're handing it to the next generation. That is not happening in many NFL locker rooms. It's not. You don't stay in the NFL very long. It's all about your agent and your people telling you, you got to feed your family, man. And if you help that guy, he's going to cut 2 years off of your career, which is going to be millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars. Don't help him. Bury him. You are a paid-for-hire player. You're going to be playing for someone else in 3 years. Don't love this team. All that. And then you hear these two superstars who still, like Patrick, so youthful and is going to be here a long time. We know that. But how about that? That they're teaching everybody that this is the standard and this is how you – the little keys, like get 3 steps ahead – every time Travis Kelce teaches someone on the offense what Andy's really trying to do, that's going to help the Chiefs 10 years from now. It's unbelievable.
So when we had Anthony Sherman in yesterday, he talked about the fact that Travis Kelce knows the offense and knows this other team's defense as well as quarterbacks do. That's why
because he is a quarterback.
Because Andy Reid gives him the freedom to run routes the way he wants to and change things on the fly. And other wide receivers in the offense don't get that same freedom, but Reid knows he can trust Kelce. Kelce tells a story in the thing where he says, early on, when you know Mahomes was understudy to Alex Smith, they would go watch their girlfriends and wives play volleyball. And they get to the volleyball game one day, and he's like, Mahomes is sitting in his car in the parking lot. So I roll up to his car, and I'm like, what's up, Mahomes? And he's got this notebook out, and he's scribbling all these notes down, and he's got all this, you know, diagramming of plays going on that he's studying. And Kelce goes, man, I haven't been doing that stuff. I better start doing that if Mahomes is doing it. And that's what got him studying. You know, he studies at the same level that a quarterback does. How many position players out there are studying at the same level that the quarterbacks do? And it's all a knock-on effect from what Alex Smith taught. But also, those two guys deserve a ton of credit because they paid attention. They listened to Alex Smith. And Mahomes did say, Alex wasn't always telling me, hey, you need to be at the meeting at this time. It was me saying, what time are you getting there? You know, and I'm doing everything you're doing. And that's on Mahomes, you know, for being like, not just walking in and going, well, I'm the draft pick. I can do whatever I want. He followed Alex Smith's lead. And it's just crazy to see how important that stuff really is with the way these two guys have become the best in the league at what they do.
Just incredible. You always bring things back to your personal level. Like, I wish I could study all third down plays and get into the depth of, hey, these red zone plays and study football to that level. I don't have time to do it. It's interesting what Patrick Mahomes said. His first step is just to sit back, watch the games, and get a feel. That's how I study. For TCU, I'm not looking for any particular thing. I'm not going to like, hey, I'm going to make three main points so I can tell Nate and Steven three. I don't do that. I just sit there and go, I don't know what's going to ooze out. Something's going to start popping where I get theorems in my head or feel like I really understand TCU, but I'm not going to stress about it. It's like he did his first preparation. That's what I do a lot of, just say, I'm not going to get specific in every X and O, but I'm just going to watch. And suddenly I'll start saying, hey, here's the key that gets them going. Well, it's great talking to Kansas City today. Thanks for having me. The last thing I want to say is I got this question in my mind. Steven, you still there?
Absolutely.
Okay. Happy birthday again, but I want you to think about this, Steven. The story started today, if you didn't hear it, and if you haven't heard the podcast, about Matt Nagy giving information the day before to Patrick Mahomes that he was going to meet with Andy Reid, giving him the playbook or some information that Coach Reid's going to talk about and want to see what Patrick Mahomes knows. Okay, we got that story. I ask you this question. Did Andy Reid do that on purpose? Did he tell Matt Nagy, give it to him? I want to see what he retains. I think he's my quarterback, but I want to see what he retains. Give him the story. How does he handle it? What was the Raiders quarterback who they gave a Jamar Russell. They gave him a blank tape.
Yep.
Jamarcus Russell. Raiders first round pick, right? They said, take this tape home, watch it, and come back and tell us what you think. And when he came back, they had given him a blank tape. So when he came back with any answer, it was a lie because it was blank and there was nothing there. How would Patrick Mahomes handle getting the answers to the test? Or would he even be able to comprehend and retain it? Would he study it or would he sleep? I wonder, I asked myself the question, did Andy Reid tell Matt Nagy, give him this information, let's see how he handles it, see how he comes back tomorrow? Is there any chance that Matt didn't do it on his own? I just ask. I just have so much confidence in Andy Reid being the puppet master. I'm just saying.
Did
you guys ever ask that question yourself?
I think it's what's of note is what Mahomes did say was, I was studying that all night long.
Yep.
You know, and that tells you something about Patrick Mahomes right there. Stan, have a great trip down to Fort Worth, and we'll talk to you next
week. Everybody drive safe. I know there's going to be a big purple wave of cars rolling down flights, and if I see you on the flight today, let's go K-State. Big game tomorrow.
All right, we'll get a weather forecast from Gary Lezak right after this. Last night, I was getting text message from my friend Emily Mitchell. She was literally crying yesterday, Gary, as you signed off of your TV career. But I said, have no fear. Just tune into the Border Patrol every morning because he's still with us.
Wow. Wow. It was quite a day yesterday, but today is the beginning of the rest of our lives, right?
Wow. Isn't that the truth?
It is. Right now is all that matters. So,
are you happy?
I'm happy. I didn't get to sing happy birthday to you last week, though.
Well, there's time right now.
You ready? Real quickly. Happy belated birthday to you. Happy belated birthday to you. Happy belated birthday, dear Stephen St. John. Happy 50th belated birthday, 50, to you. You crying?
Thank you very much. Very nice.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So anyway, did you get to see it, Steven, or did you miss it?
Oh, I've seen plenty of it. I've seen all the reaction and everything else. Are you just beside yourself with how everyone's giving you this outpouring of affection and support?
It's really incredible, and it's a little overwhelming. Yesterday was overwhelming. The hour and a half or so before the final show, maybe about 4:30 or so, I was like, I need more time. I'm not ready. I haven't sent emails out. I need more time. I just felt like, right, I needed more time. But no, you don't need more time. It was perfect. It was absolutely wonderful. And so thank you to everyone out there for all those comments. And yes, we're on Sports Radio 810. I might do the weather in the morning. And you can watch KSHB 41 in the afternoon and evening and in the morning as well. So, and by the way, they just posted on KSHB.com last night's video, sort of encompassing my career a little bit. It's really emotionally strong. So go read that story, KSHB.com. You'll see it front and center up there. And that's special. But, yeah, today we begin something special because, you know, my goals in my life, and they're going to happen, is getting Weather 2020 and the LRC to help save lives around the world. We already are doing that a little bit, but it's going to become a bigger force because we have something special to share with the world. The pattern is cycling regularly, and the storm that produced the tornadoes in the southeastern United States are directly related to tornadoes that happened in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, earlier, a few weeks earlier. And I now know when that's going to return. So things like that are going to be shared with the world, and that's why I retired from TV. So, but I get to be on with you guys. I mean, I hope, right, you're excited about it. I know you say that. Now you've got me. Are you happy?
Oh, I'm incredibly excited about it, and I really
do. You belong to us.
Yeah, that's right.
I might end that right now.
You belong to us.
I belong, right, to no one.
Nope.
And I am, I'm actually very eager anticipation of your weather forecast because I'm going to be down in the Power and Light District starting at about 6 a.m. tomorrow.
Wow.
And the gates open at 7 for this watch party that's going to be packed by 8 o'clock. How cold is it going to be for all of us down there tomorrow?
Oh, my goodness. Unfortunately, this cold front's blowing through. We have a wind advisory in effect for today. It's starting out close to 50 degrees. In fact, it's 51 degrees already, high of 64 degrees this afternoon. But unfortunately, this cold blast comes in. So bundle up. We're lots of layers. High tomorrow will be, 36. But in the morning, 22 with a wind chill factor of 6. Nate, I hate to say. So we've had better days. But it's going to be dry. At least it's going to be dry.
We'll just have to all huddle for warmth, all 10,000 of us.
That's right. Everyone huddled together for warmth. Go USA. 45 to 50 mile per hour wind gusts are possible today. Full skirt alert is in effect.
Oh, boy.
Full skirt alert. So be careful. And 64 degrees this afternoon. You guys have a good day. Once again, go to kshb.com, and you can see that that incredible piece and story. Have a good day, guys.
Thanks, Gary.
Yes, Gary, thank you. Hey, we're officially into the dragon ass portion of the show. You're going to have to drag me for these last 2 hours, bro.
I'll be
It might be over.
I'll be dragging your ass all the way to 10 o'clock, pal. We'll do that right after this. We got the Border Patrol Blitz coming up. We'll talk Mizzou, KU, and K-State straight ahead.